York sports is more than a game. It's a lifestyle. WFAN is the only place where Yankees, Mets, Giants, and Jets fans come together and sound off. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
It's true, though. That zoom in, I understand that my face is big. It's always been big. Even when I've, you know, been at my thinnest, I've always had a round face for whatever reason. But, like, it's funny, too. McMonagle here with you, by the way. 10:05. How are you? 888-808-1019. We got Alex on the other side. We're taking your calls for the next 2 hours on our ride to midnight here on this Thursday evening. But it's true. You know, I've always had the round face. There's nothing I can do about it. And then also, you know, let's be totally honest. I work at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, I'm in here and whatever. But today I actually put some gel in my hair. But the extreme close-up, like, it's funny. And I'm not trying to tell you that, you know, the old camera weighs adds 10 pounds or whatever. Because, I mean, I think it does, but that's fine. But what's funny is, like, I got the best reaction from, and I'm going to forget her name. She was such a nice woman. And she actually, I saw her at the Fan Fest as well. But I'll never forget. It was one of the great reactions I've ever gotten. I went to Yankee opening day, and Keith had something outside one of the bars, and I met up with him, and there was a fan there. And she looked at me, and she went, "Big Mac?" And I said, "Hi, how are you?" And I guess she remembered me, Big Mac, from, that's what, Carton and Roberts, that was what I went by when I was Carton and Roberts. Now it's kind of C-Mac or McMonagle, doesn't matter. She was like, "Big Mac, is that you?" I'm like, "Yeah." She goes, "You look so good." I'm like, "Well, thank you. I guess when you see me on TV, I don't." "But you look so good." I was like, "Oh, that was very nice of you. But at the same time, it means you were expecting me not to. Why? Why, I wonder? Maybe it's because the camera's trying to get up my nose on these videos." 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. A lot of baseball. The baseball calls are still coming in. We can get into a little bit of football, too, as obviously I'm watching football right now. That's right. It's back. And preseason for the Giants and Jets starts on Saturday. And you know what's funny? There's nothing like football. I'm a baseball guy, right? Oh, that's my favorite sport, has been my whole life. Love baseball, love playing it a whole bit. I love playing football too. I had more success playing football in high school than I did baseball, actually. But there's something special about football, right? The football season. I'm already getting all the emails from the things I'm involved in, the pools I'm involved in, the fantasy leagues. My buddy's already put out the video where he picked the draft order. We're getting ready. Preseason football's on tap. Saturday, both teams playing. So excited for it. So pumped. I'm going to make sure I'm there on Saturday to watch the Giants kick off Saturday night. Looking forward to it. Should be great. I'll watch 5 minutes of it and go, all right, what else? Like, I can't get into the preseason. I get all hyped for it. I get in. You know, especially now the Jets are going to play their guys, apparently. Why? Because they're going to play. That's why. Aaron Glenn. You got to love him. But, like, as soon I'll turn on the game, I'm pumped for it. Yeah, football's back. I'll watch one drive and go, anything else on? Like, I can't get into preseason football. I can't. It's tough. And the moment you get into it, you're all pumped for it, and then you watch 5 minutes of it, and you're like, I've had enough of this. Like, it doesn't matter. But this year, for both these teams, it is going to matter. And Saturday's a big day, and obviously the Jets are on record today. They're going to play. And I think this is in line with what Aaron Glenn is trying to instill. Like, you're trying, and you'll live with it if you, we saw Anthony Richards already. Now, he's prone to injuries, unfortunately. Dislocated pinky, and he's already gone. We'll see what kind of time frame a dislocated pinky on your throwing hand is for a quarterback. It's not great. But he can't stay healthy. Injuries in preseason, going back to Mark Sanchez, and, you know, it is a difficult thing to tolerate. It is a difficult thing to understand. But at the same time, the Jets are trying to instill a culture here and a winning attitude. And to me, competition, and the other thing is, we have seen the main reason why I want to see guys play, and I think for both the Giants and the Jets, I would be more interested this year than ever before in seeing the team play as much as possible, as much as reasonable in the preseason, is because we have seen teams really get off to bad starts, and it feels like it's based on the lack of gelling as a team, as a unit, maybe the offensive line, certainly a lack of tackling, which has been you watch for the first couple weeks of the NFL season, the missed tackles are through the roof. And I think that is directly because these guys don't play often. They don't play much before week one, week two. They have treated it, you know, preseason. These guys don't play pretty much. And the idea of how important the start of the season is for both of these teams, the New York Giants, right? We talk about this schedule and how difficult it is. Right now, you got Terry McLaurin demanding a trade out in Washington to start the season. An offensive line that, you know, we'll see, and a defensive front of the Giants that hopefully gets after the quarterback. And I'm not ready to declare Dan Quinn a great head coach. I don't think he was one in Atlanta. I know he did a good job last year. I think that's Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury, a lot of it. And I know their defense is vastly improved. And they added a lot of guys, and they're one of the older teams in the NFL. I don't know if they're world beaters. Dallas Cowboys, I don't know how good Dallas is, as Micah Parsons as well is demanding a trade out of Dallas. And listening to the owner speak lately is just, I mean, he's just saying gibberish. I don't even know. Every day Marco comes in the overnights and tells me, oh, you gotta hear this thing I just cut up with Jerry Jones. Like, every day. I don't know what they are. And those are the first two teams on the road before coming home to Kansas City. If the Giants are going to win some football games, I think the first 2 weeks, despite it being on the road, is a good opportunity to get this season started in a positive way. So go out there and play. Play your guys. Let's go. Let's be ready to hit the field. Let's be better than a Washington team that's dealing with drama and their stud wide receiver as they're trying to get a second year of this great quarterback. Let's go attack Dallas while there's still issue about who's getting paid and who's not getting paid and, you know, what's going on with Micah Parsons. Like, let's go out there and take it to these two divisional opponents and suddenly make things look a little bit better. And then the Jets, you know, the same thing too with culture building and coaching. If Aaron Glenn is going to come out there and ram coaching down our throats as if it's every answer to every question. Why is Will McDonald doing this? Coaching. Why is this? Coaching. Coaching, coaching, coaching. That's what it is. We're here to coach. They're here to listen. They're hungry for it. Because of the previous regime sucked at it, and we're going to come out there and coach the brakes off this team. Well, you can't come out and look like a sloppy bunch. You can't go coaching, 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 and because you didn't play in the preseason, have a bunch of pre-snap penalties. No one's going to want to see it. No one's going to want to hear it. Let alone the idea they can't complete a pass right now, and I know it's just practice. I know it's just camp. But Justin Fields is not a great thrower of the football. He's got an arm that doesn't make him a great thrower of the football. He's not accurate. He doesn't read defenses. Can't complete a pass in camp here. Like, you do not want to get off to a start week one where you look incompetent or you look like all the culture and the coaching and culture was just a bunch of talk that has manifested in the same crappy Jets team we've seen forever. You don't have to go out there and necessarily win all these games, of course, but you got to go out there and look like a buttoned-up team. And there's no better way to do that than to go out there and play your starters and get a feel for this. So I actually think most years, I don't really subscribe to the idea of starting everyone. I don't want to see major injuries. Like, the last thing the Giants need is Andrew Thomas or Luminor or another key important player, Debo, Holland, you know, some of the new free agents. Like, the last thing they need is to have someone like that go down. Right? The last thing they need. Same thing with the Jets. Last thing you need is Sauce Gardner hurt. But at the same time, both of these teams right now, their seasons hang in the balance of getting off to good starts. And so many NFL teams do, right? That is, we've seen it before. And that's why I think the schedule is a bit overblown. Because we have seen teams that we suspect to be bad football teams, like last year, perfect example, Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota Vikings with, you know, Sam Darnold leading the quarterback room and leading the team. Who thought? I mean, I listened to a couple of different football podcasts. One guy was telling me that one of his favorite bets of the year is that the Minnesota Vikings for the worst record in the NFL. The Giants were favored in that game. They get off to a good start, they take off. We've seen teams that are supposed to be bad get off to good starts and become good. We have seen teams that we expect to be good get off to miserable starts and become bad. Like, the football season is such based on momentum. And for a team like the Jets, who haven't had a winning season in, you know, the longest drought in professional sports, and a coach who's come out talking about coaching and talking about culture and talking about all this, if you come out and you look sloppy because you haven't gelled and you haven't played together, and the quarterback can't complete a pass because they haven't worked in front of a opposition's defense together with his wide receiving core, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem, and you need buy-in. You need buy-in. You want to be a hard ass. You want to push your team. It's one thing to talk about competition in camp. You want to go through all that. You got to buy-in is when you see results. That's when you get buy-in from the players. So early results, as important with all teams. Nobody wants to get off to a bad start. But for these two floundering franchises who can't find their way through a season with a roadmap, it's important to get off to good starts. And I think we are seeing more than ever as the preseason gets cut down, as guys aren't playing, we are seeing bad starts from teams more than we've ever seen before. We are seeing penalties from teams more than we've ever seen before. We are seeing piss poor tackling. We are seeing a bunch of different issues with teams out the gate more than we've ever seen before in the NFL. And it would be refreshing, and it would be nice if the New York Jets and the New York Giants might be one of those teams that buck the trend, play more than usual, and come out there from the jump and get off to a good start. And look more prepared than a team like the Washington Commanders, who are going through it right now, who are very talented, very good. Jaden Daniels is an absolute superstar and had one of the best rookie seasons ever, and they repaid him by, you know, fighting with his star receiver. Let's go find out if Washington's as good as everybody says. Let's go find out if they're going to have a repeat season of the year last year that took them to the NFC Championship game. Let's go find out. And let's go find out with a team that's been molded by actually playing football for 3 weeks. 888-808-1019. We'll get back to your calls here. Baseball is still on the table, obviously. We are still in the midst of a baseball season. Pennant race. Big series this weekend for both teams. And obviously, we'll start taking your football calls as well. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Chris in Manhattan. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Chris, I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you, brother.
Chris, as a fellow Chris, does anyone call you Christopher ever, and in what context?
Does anyone ever call me Christopher? You know what? Not really. Not even my mother, even when she's mad, or wife when she's mad. I mean, that's the old cliche thing. Like when you, and my middle name is James. When so like Christopher James, uh-oh, you're in trouble. Like, you know, you saw Al Bundy or every other stupid TV show throughout kind. I don't hardly ever hear Christopher unless telemarketers. That's it.
That's good. The full name. Yeah. My memory of it is like when teachers are really angry at me.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I was in some trouble, you know, so luckily I don't get it too much. But hey, I wanted to talk best with you, Chris, because it's so interesting to get the perspective of a fan of a different team, you know, and your knowledge of baseball is really great. So, you know, I'm watching that Met game a couple days ago, the moment it came back, right? They tied it up, I guess it was 3 days ago now. And all I could think about when they lost that game is that was a game they would have won last year. You know, that felt like the kind of game they would have won.
No, there's been a couple of those, no doubt. There's been a couple of those where you felt like they would have won that game last year.
And I'm having a hard time like figuring out like what is the identity of this team. I don't really know if I can really say what it is. But I can, you know, when you look at like who's here and who's not here and who is getting these kinds of clutch hits last year, like, okay, you had Iglesias, you had Vientos, you had even Winker was getting, even Bader.
Taylor was much better, too, last year offensively.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You had a lot of people that were contributing these hits. Lindor was in a better position at that point. And if you look at who's here, with the exception of Pete and Soto being, you know, only so-so, you can see where that void is of those late-inning clutch hits. And, I mean, that's a big part of what's happening with them here.
Of course. No, the clutch hitting is the main problem, Christopher. So, like, I don't know. And thank you for the call. And I think you touched on one of my, like, identities of the team, right? When you say that, what's the identity of this team? Now, there are identities that you expect them to have heading into the season. There are teams that are built And as they're built, you look at them and you go, well, this should be their identity. And then as the season plays out, it changes. And teams, you know, fall into different identities. Like, I think back-to-back seasons now, the identity was supposed to be the offense, and it became the pitching. And I think that's the problem. Like, when I look at the Met team, to me, the identity should be. Like, when this team was built and they were heading into the season, to me, the identity is the offense should be damn good. The offense was like the sixth or seventh best offense in the sport last year, and they just added Juan Soto. And Pete Alonso can't be as bad as he was last year. Like, I expected the offense to be the driving force of the team. And I think it was built that way. It's built where Soto, Alonso, Lindor, the Fab Four, plus, honestly, if you would have said Fab Four last year, or you would have told me this year the Fab Four, I would have said, well, the fourth name is Vientos, not Nimmo. But unfortunately, that has not been the case. But I look at this Met team heading into the season, and I said to myself, okay, they're going to score a lot of runs. This offense should be really good, especially the top of the lineup. Should be very, very good. They should be a real threat throughout the lineup. And the pitching and the way they built it and what they're capable of with their pitching lab and how they've gotten more out of less than anybody else in the sport, really, outside of maybe, you know, the Astros a couple years ago when they found ways to, you know, rejuvenate Verlander's career, and they turned Charlie Morton into a big-time starter and, you know, turned Cole from a promising young pitcher into one of the better pitchers in baseball. Like, they did a really good job for a stretch of getting the most out of a starting rotation. Like, what the Mets have done is incredible. So, but they didn't give you, like, top-level talent in there. You know, Verlander's won Cy Young's. Cole was a top overall pick. You know, they've been doing it with the Island of Misfit Toys, but they were bringing them in and getting the best out of them. And you knew you had Senga and you had Minaya. But for me, it's going to be a great offense, and the pitching staff should be good enough to complement a really dynamic offense. That's how I viewed the Mets heading into the season. And it's never been that. It's never been that. So when you say, like, what's this team's identity? Well, it's certainly not what we thought it was going to be. So now after 115, 116 games, whatever it's been, have they built one? And you're right. I don't know if they have. I don't know if they've built a different one. I know it's not the one we expected, but across the 115 games, have they built an identity? Early on, it was the pitching staff. Early on, it was Griffin Canning and his 2 ERA. Early on, it was Kodai Senga and his under 2 ERA. Early on, it was Clay Holmes pitching better than you would have suspected. Like that. Early on, it was the same as last year, starting pitching. Now that has kind of faltered a little bit. They're not getting deep into games. Montas stinks. Senga hasn't been great since his return to the injury. Minaya's been, you know, pretty good, but had a couple blow-ups here since his return from his injury. And it just feels like there is no real identity of the team. And to me, without an identity, I look back to what I think it's supposed to be. So I'm looking for them to find that identity, and I want it to be an excellent offense that has just good enough starting pitching, because they're good at turning, you know, average starting pitchers into good starting pitchers, and go about winning that way. And now you've bolstered the bullpen, so now what's the identity? The three-headed monster of Rogers, Helsley, and Diaz at the back end? I mean, I guess that becomes the identity right now, if you can get there. But I'm looking for that top of the order at the Fab Four to build that identity. And that's, I mean, the idea that Juan Soto isn't at the forefront of the identity of this team is hard to fathom, and they're not going to be as good as they can be until that's the case. That's like when you look at the Mets and you talk identity, right now the identity of the team hasn't been and is not now Juan Soto. And not just Juan Soto, but the offense, but Juan Soto has to be a part of the identity. He has not been. And until that happens, they're not going to be as good as they can be. It still might be good enough to get into the postseason. It might even be good enough to win a couple series. I don't know. But maybe he'll go off and become the identity in the postseason. But that's how they'll be their best. Their best has to be Lindor, Alonso, Soto. That's the core. That's the identity of the team. Otherwise, they're just, you know, figuring out a way to win.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
Everything. Everything Is Everything, off of one of the great albums of the 90s, Lauryn Hill, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Phenomenal. Great album, along with the Fugees, The Score, back in, what was that, like 94, 95? I remember when the Fugees, The Score came out. That was a massive, massive album. I miss those days where albums came out and you actually went to the store. You went to Sam Goody's at the bottom of Roosevelt Field Mall. 96. Which one was 96? The Fugees, The Score?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds about right. I mean, just a tremendous album. So good. I think of like Dookie, The Score. What are some other classic? Nevermind. Classic 90s albums. Miss those days. I miss all that stuff, man. I know I'm old now, but, or, you know, I'm not that old, but we play the game of we're old, but I miss Blockbuster. I miss, you know, Sam Goody's, and there was I don't know if it was a chain that was all over the country, but here in Long Island, there was Coconuts. I used to go to Coconuts and buy CDs and movies and just don't do anything more. Everything's just right to your phone, which I appreciate the convenience, but I miss those days. 888-808-1019, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Let's get back to the calls. Colin in Rybrook. What's up, Colin?
Christopher James, thank you for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. I appreciate it.
I listen to the morning, afternoon, night, and late night shows, and you know I want to bang my head against my car window sometimes more than the guys at Night of the Roxbury trying to drive to the club.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear the fellow spoiled Yankee fans trying to grasp onto the late 90s, early 2000s dynasties comparison of this team with the Judge and the Jeter. But in the, in the spirit of, trying to take the bait and make a stretch, what would you feel, or how do you feel about if they brought up a Spencer Jones or a Lombard, almost like, a rookie Ricky Ledet, or, Shane Spencer lighting a little bit of a spark, because we talk about that they want accountability in the spark. And nothing brings out a sink or swim mentality and accountability like a young, energetic player trying to make their mark and take their job.
Yeah. It definitely wouldn't be Lombard. That's for sure. The question is Spencer Jones.
Yeah.
And I got
he's too young, but it was.
Yeah, he's still in.
Like,
yeah.
Healthy, like just to light a spark, not to start, but like just to bring somebody up, just to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no September call-ups anymore like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But just before the rosters expanded and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Spencer Jones would be interesting. I haven't seen, I don't know. I haven't checked in on his stats lately. I know he was dealing with some back spasms. I'm assuming he's back in the lineup. There was a stretch there where every day we were seeing multiple home run games. Like, I guess he's cooled off because I haven't seen those videos as much. But I don't think that. I don't think they need Spencer Jones right now. I just the offense is okay. Yeah, the defense. Like if there's an injury or something, maybe. I think you're looking at him possibly being part of the team next year. It's always competition is good, absolutely, and we'll see if Caballero, who hasn't played shortstop yet, could be someone for Anthony Volpe to play shortstop, give him a break, or just make him realize that he's got to play better if he wants to be the starting shortstop on an everyday basis. But I don't think they have that guy. Spencer Jones is gonna. I don't think Dominguez isn't playing well because he knows he's guaranteed left field. He hasn't been. He knows when Judge is back, he might not be the starting left fielder. Like I don't think that's the issue with this team. I'm trying to get the best roster possible, and to lean on a Spencer Jones would not be in my mind a rookie like that. We've seen it before. You're right. Now again, you mentioned a couple guys like Ricky Ledet was a platoon player. Spencer, Shane Spencer came up, but he had years under the minor leagues. Spencer Jones wasn't, Spencer Jones is 24 years old, never played before. Shane Spencer was a bit older and went on that crazy, miraculous run at the end of that season. It was crazy. So, and right now, offense isn't their problem. So I don't see it. I don't see he's bringing up. I'm not even thinking about that. I'm not even thinking about that right now. Ben in Connecticut. What's up, Ben?
Hey, Chris. Nice to talk to you, man.
Nice to talk to you, buddy. What's going on?
So I actually was listening to the earlier shows, too, and there were a bunch of callers talking about how they're actually afraid. They think Aaron Glenn's making a bad move because they're afraid of guys getting injured. It's like, yeah. We are trying to we are
I do
trying
understand
to
that,
around.
Though. Don't you understand that, though? Like, as much sure. as I just went on the rant, I do understand that fear because there's nothing worse than losing a guy in a meaningless football game. There's nothing worse.
Of course. We are in a unique situation where this team has literally been in a disaster, historic downturn for 14 years. They haven't, you know, or more, haven't made the postseason,
yeah.
right? They haven't made the playoffs. And we're trying to have a full-scale culture change here. And you know what? One of the risks of changing the culture is you need a guy with a little moxie who's going to say, listen, there's a football game. We're going to get out and play it. It's the same mentality, okay, that was brought to that Lions team and changed the whole culture of the Lions. That yeah. team was a losing team. They were considering taking that team off Thanksgiving because they could not even compete in NFL games. And all of a sudden, that coaching staff goes in there and says, hey, we are no longer going to be the lay-down Lions. We're going to be the go-for-it-on-fourth-down Lions. And guess what? Sometimes they go for it on fourth down in that first season, and they look like idiots because they went for it on fourth and seven and gained 2 yards and whatever.
Yeah.
But you know what? In the aggregate, when you change a culture and say, we are going to play a certain way, a certain brand, a certain style, we're going to raise our collective.
Oh, you're going on a good rant there, Ben. I don't disagree with you. Especially that's what he's selling. Like, let's be honest, he's a culture hire. Not that he doesn't deserve to be a head coach, not that he doesn't have the resume, you know, not that he doesn't deserve this position. He clearly does. But this is a culture hire. This is a, you know, he can tell you how the wind was blowing in the 98 AFC Championship game because he's been a Jet. He understands the franchise. He understands the position. He wanted this job, and he's come here to change the franchise. And I played the highlight or the cut a couple days ago of him talking about how it hit him during the green and white scrimmage when the fans did the JETS Jets. Like, it hit him that he's the head coach of this team. And he was very candid. For a guy, like, you just heard the update. They're playing the sound from him as far as, you know, why are you guys playing? Because there's a football game and we're playing. That's why. Like, that's been 99% of how Aaron Glenn has been choosing to portray himself and how he's dealt with the media. He's just, what do you mean? Why are we playing? Because there's a football game. Like he's been very gruff. He's been very, you know, combative almost. He's really trying to be, you know, football coach. And then there was a moment there where he was like, you know what? I got to, for whatever reason, guys, this, it just hit me, man. I'm blessed to be here. I can't wait. And you get the sense how much it means to him. He wants to turn this franchise around. He wants to win. He wants to prove he can coach. You know, he wants the thrill of victory, all that, but he wants to turn around the Jets. He wanted this job. I'm assuming he had at least an opportunity to be a coach somewhere else, and he certainly interviewed elsewhere. But he wanted to be the next Jets head coach. He wants to be the one that ends this playoff drought. He wants to change the organization top to bottom. And if you're going to do that, and if you're going to be hired based on that, right? That's what he's being hired because, like, when Tibbs gets fired after you're going to the Eastern Conference Finals, it's about, well, we need to refine what we need from our head coach. It's great that we've gotten here. He's certainly helped turn around the franchise. Great. But, you know, we're at a point right now where we're chasing a championship and we think we need a guy who's better at this and that and specific reasons. When you're the lousy New York Jets, you're hiring a coach to come in here and change everything, especially off of all the stories about the owner, you know, the Madden ratings and his kids run the show and he's yelling at Mike White in the locker room and everything else. The embarrassment has been, this ownership group and how, you know, the feeling around the fan base in the NFL of Woody Johnson and all the stories that come out. Like, you hire this coach, he doesn't have to be an offensive guru. He doesn't have to be a defensive guru. He doesn't have to be really good at this because we've struggled at it. He has to come in and reshape the franchise. And he's been selling it as strongly as anyone can sell it. And if you're going to do that, then you've got to go down the line with that. And down the line with that is, I'm going to play the guys in these preseason games, and we're going to get after it. And we're going to go play because Jets win football games, and there's a football game. Like the caller just said it. That's exactly why he's doing it. He's doing it because, hey, we're about to go play a football game on Saturday, and when the Jets line up to play football games, we win. That's exactly why he's doing it. And it comes with inherent risk. Because everyone's going to go, that's great, that's wonderful, that's, I'm totally with you. Absolutely, that sounds terrific. I'm totally on board. And then Fashanu goes down, and we're like, oh my God, how the heck was he in this game? That's the risk you take. But there is a reward. There is a reward. And, you know, he's trying to build something here. And I applaud him, and I think they should. And plus, you want to get off to a good start. That's the other, and I've said it a couple times here. I've said it in the overnight. When you're selling changing the franchise, and you're selling coaching, and you're selling the idea that we're going to be more buttoned up, it better start early. That's the only thing about it. It better be obvious right out the gate. If they come out and look, you know, because they haven't played all preseason, and they have like four or five, you know, pre-snap penalties in the first half, you're like, what the hell is this? I thought we were cleaning this crap up. I thought this is why he's hired. Like, and not that it can't change from that point, but it'll just be disheartening. Like, they got to come out and play sharp football from the jump. And there's no better way to do that than to go out there and continue to play football.
Real sports talk for real fans with real opinions. The Fan, 101.9 FM and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
All right, 10:50, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019 on this Thursday night. No baseball this evening, gearing up for two big series as the Mets will go into Milwaukee, who right now are the best team in baseball. They've won six in a row, nine out of their last 10. They have the best run differential in baseball. I know no one seems to care, but I bet you when I bring it up about the Brewers, no one's going to push back on it. Bully offense, those Brewers. 70-44. And not only that, right? Last year's postseason, Pete Alonso's home run off of Devin Williams. Rallying back, winning that game, taking that wild card series going on, and obviously beating the Phillies. It started with the Milwaukee. Obviously, your GM built up this program in Milwaukee that is still running strong without him. He started the foundations of what has become a very, very, very successful organization with the Brewers. So you've got, you know, the dynamic of him being the former Brewers GM, the history of last year, taking on the best team in the National League with, you know, a payroll nowhere near the payroll the New York Mets have. Like, this is an opportunity for the Mets to make a statement. And I more than that, like, it's time for Juan Soto to step up. And I know I don't want to make it all about Juan Soto, all right? I know that. I know the afternoon show did a lot on Juan Soto today. I yelled a little bit about Juan Soto last night, despite having the home run to save them of being embarrassed with a no-hitter. He's just not been good enough. And we wait for it, and we wait for it, and, you know, we just assume it's going to happen. We assume it's going to happen, and I understand why, because he's fantastic. He's a great player. And he had the great month of June, and everybody was taking bows. See, oh, what happened to the uncomfortable, not happy to be a Met guy now? Well, even in June, they were playing some of their worst baseball while he was on fire. But right now, he's been terrible those last 16 games. He's leaving the strike zone more than ever. And I wonder if, like, I'm like, this is a, I know it's Milwaukee. It's not the Dodgers. It's not the Cubs. It's not the, you know, Braves, who they'll face next as they come home to take on the Braves. It's not one of the sexier teams, but Milwaukee right now is the best team in baseball. He just hit a home run his last at bat. It is time for Juan Soto to get going right now. Right now. So, I mean, as great as he is, can you just expect the switch to change? Because he's not been bad. I mean, his OPS is 8-something. Like, it's way down from what it typically is. Even in that series against Cleveland, he's 3-for-10 with a home run, couple of runs scored. It's like, okay, he hit 300, hit a home run, scored a couple of runs. Not bad. Can't get on him. You can. He's got to be better than this. And he's got to be more impactful with the games. And this is a big series, and hopefully Juan Soto decides to show up for it. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Daniel in Westport. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, Danny, what's going on?
What's up? So I would like to talk about, you know, the Yankees series tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think some of the important, like, points for them to win, you know, Aaron Judge, you know, he has to be really good tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about on that, like Aaron Judge?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I wonder how many games he's going to play in the series because I don't know how long they can go without playing Stanton. I think they're going to want to get Stanton some at bat, so I would think he doesn't play all three. I don't know if he'll play tomorrow night. I'm assuming he will. But, yeah, he's got to, you know, he's come back. He hasn't looked all that great. He got a hit yesterday. He had a bad at bat in his first at bat of the game where he was 3-0 and popped up an inside fastball. But he's going to have to be a driving force in the team. We all know that. We all know how important he is. He's the captain of the team. As he goes, they go. So he's obviously one of the things you're looking at for him to get comfortable, maybe hit a couple out here and take on the Astros, who are throwing, you know, their two best starting pitchers. You're going to get the Yankees are going to get Brown, and the Yankees are going to get Valdez in the first two games of the series. So they have to figure out a way to come out there. Hunter Brown versus Cam Schlittler tomorrow night. And then I believe it is Valdez versus Warren in the second game of the series. So they had Luis Gil, I'm sorry. Valdez versus Luis Gil, who's barely gotten his season started. So the offense is going to have to try and figure out a way to hit two of the better pitchers in the American League.
Yeah, I agree. And Jose Altuve, he's been having a great past few weeks. Hopefully, mm-hmm. we can shut him down, but I don't know.
Yeah, listen, Altuve is the enemy, and thank you for the call, Danny. Good job. Altuve is the enemy, no doubt. And when he shows up to the Bronx, he gets booed and he's successful. Those are the two things you can bank on. They have got to do a good job of keeping him off the base paths, keeping the damage from Jose Altuve, who's continued. Look, he's hitting .280. He's got 19 home runs and 60 RBIs. He is making a case. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame player. That's how good he is. And they're going to have to figure out a way to win this game. Now, Alvarez still isn't there. Christian Walker's back from injury. They've obviously added Correa at third base. They've been floundering as of late. Like, they did a really good job to take control of the division, but 4-6 in the last 10. They did win this last series against Miami, 2 out of 3, but they haven't been playing great baseball. You got to go out there and take it to them. And that's why I'm excited about the game, because I think it's like I'm looking for opportunities to prove that the Yankees are better. It's one thing to say, okay, the Minnesota Twins suck. Great. The Yankees should go out there and beat the Twins. But to see how they respond. Like, this is where you want to find out what kind of job Aaron Boone's doing. How do they respond against the Houston Astros? How do they respond off this lousy stretch? How do they respond off that big-time win? How do they go in at home against the Houston Astros, and how do they play? You want to find out about Aaron Boone? These are the series. You find out about the manager. You find out about the captain. You find out about the team. Like, this is what I want, because if they beat Minnesota, okay, great. It's three wins. They desperately need them. Don't get me wrong, but good. Doesn't mean anything to me other than we got three wins. They go out and beat Houston. Now you start feeling like, okay, maybe they can start to build off this. And then follow it up with Minnesota. That's the other thing, too. They always play well against Minnesota. Minnesota just sold away their entire team, practically. If they can go in there and take 2 out of 3 against Houston, feel like they're building something, and then go right into a Minnesota series that you're hoping to take all three, now you're on a bit of a roll. That's what is called a winning streak. It's been known to happen before. Kevin in River Edge. What's up, Kevin?
Oh, what's up, C-Mac?
What's up, brother?
I just want to talk about how I'm infuriated with Austin Wells, and I don't know what he's done to prove that he's the starting catcher for the team. I think Ben Rice hits the ball harder, and he's not that much worse behind the plate. He's unplayable.
Yeah. No, he's been terrible offensively, and I don't know if it's just his hand issues or whatever, but he's been terrible offensively. I think
because he's had a good rookie year, like that's why he gets the catching job for the New York Yankees over a guy who hits the ball hard.
Well, I mean, I guess. I mean, he had a great rookie year, right? You're right. I agree with you. And now he's more of a defensive catcher. They decided to give him the role. I mean, they've been transitioning to Rice playing catcher. We'll see how much he plays down the stretch. But, like, should they never give a young kid a chance? We complain they never give prospects a chance. They're prospect huggers. They never give the kids a chance, you know. Well, you know, they're giving Wells a chance, and he's failing this year. And now I think Rice has taken over.
Your manager for the entire Astros series, game one, is it Rice or Wells behind the plate? Are you with me or are you against me?
With Cam Schlittler on the mound, I think that's part of it too, because you say he's not that. Like, Ben Rice has been fine, but if you look at the metrics, Wells is really good with balls in the dirt. Wells is really good with framing. He is a much better defensive catcher than Ben Rice.
Yeah.
He is. No, he just did. You could sing. It's true. He is. Now, I agree with you that Ben Rice has been fine, and his offense is so much better that I'm willing to play Ben Rice at least 50-50, maybe even more. Like, we'll see how it goes from here. But with Cam Schlittler on the mound, I don't know. And you're going up against Hunter Brown, the right-handed pitcher, so I probably want Rice in the lineup over Goldschmidt. So I probably have Wells at the catcher and Rice at first base. That's probably what I do. But, I mean, you're right. You're not wrong. I just don't like the way you put it. Like, oh, so because he had a good rookie year, now he gets to be catcher of the New York Yankees? Yeah, I mean, listen, they believe in a guy. They're giving him the season. What is it? Like, you know, maybe next year they change their thought process. But, right, and they don't have, you know, a great option. Ben Rice is a catcher, and I'm open to especially against left-handed pitching. Left-handed pitching, I think Ben Rice should be the catcher, Goldschmidt the first baseman. That's without question. And then even most of the games against right-handed pitching, I'd still go that route. I'm on board with you. I'm willing to start really moving Rice into much more of a almost platoon or 50-50 split with Wells. But I can't, you know, you do need the better catcher behind the plate more often than not. I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic. But, like, the fact that you have to just get off of Wells completely, I don't know if they're going to be there just yet. 888-808-1019. Oh, Marco's here for the first time today. That's nice. Good to see you, Marco. How are you?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
what do we got today? What are we wearing? Oh, Big Kahuna Burger.
You like hamburgers for breakfast?
Yeah, nothing. That's a tasty burger. 11:51, McMonagle here with you on the
Look
fan.
Look at the big brain on Brett.
Look at the big brain on Brad. Is it Brett or Brad? Why did I want to say Brad?
I think it's Brett.
Is it Brett? Yeah.
I think.
Yep. Because of the metric system. And I just saw another one that I know you're a fan of. I think we talked about even reading the book. Are you Heat 2? Did you tell me you were reading the book Heat 2?
Read it, but I stole it from the newsroom.
Okay, I remember having this conversation.
I have not gotten to it yet, though.
Well, okay, so here's the real quick before the update. The news on Heat 2. They want to make the movie. Michael Mann wants to make the movie.
And he wrote the book, so you know.
He wrote the book.
Which is strange.
Wants to make Heat 2. Heat was a tremendous movie.
Great movie.
Great movie. So he wants to do Heat 2, but here's the thing. He will only do it if the budget's $175 million plus. He wants to do it. Like, and there's been like issues. The company doesn't really want to invest that much money into it. Leonardo DiCaprio is in talks to star. So right now they're waiting. If Leo takes the role,
then you could justify the budget.
Then they'll justify the budget. So I just read a whole article about it.
Now I should know this, considering I stole the book quite some time ago and never read it.
Yeah.
This is like a straight sequel? Like, are we
I don't know. You would know better than me. You read the book.
I did not read the book. I took the book, and I did not read the book. That's the point.
Well, why would you take a book and not read it? That's almost more disrespectful.
No. I took it with the intention of reading it.
There is a...
And it is on my list.
There's like a 12-pack of Surfsides out there. I'm probably going to take it with every intention of drinking them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
I'll just take them and then just, I wouldn't know. How are the Surfsides? I don't know. I took the 12-pack, but I never actually drank
them. Drinking a Surfside should not take you 3 months. takes me sometimes quite a while to get through a book. I'm currently in the middle of a book,
okay,
but it takes me a while. I have a lot of downtime there, C-Mac.
I understand.
I don't know about you.
No, I get you. We don't
these
have
hours.
We don't have downtime. I'm with you.
It gets a little difficult to sometimes just, you know, roll up and relax with a book.
Okay.
Currently, I'm reading The Last Don. It's going to take me a little bit to get through
that. Audiobook in the car. Tremendous. Audiobook while you're walking.
You miss the word, and this is the word that I enjoy.
Read?
Read.
Nah. It's the same
I don't
thing.
Want to listen.
It's the same thing.
To you telling me a book.
Yeah.
I want to read the book.
Books on tape, they're fantastic. But I don't know.
I'm sure
I don't,
they are.
They
I
are.
Have no
they
interest.
Really are. I don't know if it's a straight sequel or whatever, but right now it's he wants to do it. He wants a certain budget. He's going to need a star attached to get that budget.
I'm just curious. Some, like, is Leo Al Pacino? Is he
I don't
Robert
know.
De Niro?
I don't
is
know.
It in the prequel? Is it in the.
I don't know.
30. Because you can't just make a straight sequel. I mean, Pacino's kind of old.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll be in it at all. Maybe they're not in it at all.
I would imagine not.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I don't think he's going to be throwing the TV set out the car
plus,
at 85
I mean,
years old.
And,
I don't think he cares
plus,
anymore.
After watching The Irishman, I don't want Robert De Niro doing any physical acting whatsoever.
Well, I don't want to spoil a movie that's 30 years old, but De Niro dies in Heat. So I'm pretty
right,
sure he's not
saying.
In the sequel. I'm not worried about him.
Oh, okay.
I'm worried about Pacino being in the sequel at 85 years old.
Well, because you said prequel, so I'm thinking maybe there's like something where they could do it. And we've already seen in The Irishman, they gave him the CGI younger man type thing.
So now I got to take 60 years off
his
life?
I'm just saying. All right.